Welcome. An education capable of saving humanity is no small undertaking. So let's get to work. I'm Margaret Jarrell. In today's episode, we're talking about how to create leadership in school communities that mirrors the brilliance of our Montessori classrooms. Today, we have our very own Tamra Sheasley-Ballas here with us to talk about the lessons she's learned in leadership during her 26 years in education. Tamra is trained as a primary and lower elementary Montessori guide, and both her children are Montessori children all the way through eighth grade. Welcome, Tamra.
Thank you so much, Margaret. So happy to be here. It's fun to be on this side of things.
Well, we're excited too. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about your leadership journey?
Sure. Yeah, I always wanted to be a leader. When I was a child, I think I started out bossing everybody around right away. And I stepped into leadership early. I became a Montessori director at a school. And like everyone who is in these roles, I poured my blood, my sweat, and my tears into the work. And I was successful in building enrollment. I was successful in growing our staff. I was successful in creating annual funds for the school communities that I was a part of. But what I wasn't successful at was actually building a strong sense of a staff community. And it was really a missing.
Well, what kind of leader were you then when that piece was missing? What did that look like?
That's a great question. So I wanted to be a visionary, but I really was bringing in what is called commanding. So I demanded, I really expected immediate compliance. That's, you know, do what I tell you to do. And certainly there's a place for that at times in leadership. Mm-hmm. I also was what's considered a pace setter. So I set high standards for performance and do as I do right now, but not necessarily with the structures for people to feel invested and heard and connected with what I was asking. And so when I stopped working long enough to really look around at my school communities, I saw that my leadership was working really well for some, but wasn't working for everyone. And then I had a pretty significant wake-up call. I don't know, 6-7 years ago, a group of staff wrote to my board chair to say that they were really uncomfortable with my leadership and that I was creating even a culture of fear. A few of them said that. And I was so hurt. I was so sad. Mm-hmm. Here I was, I think I was 4 years into my tenure at Greenspring. We'd done all these amazing things. Everybody was getting increases in their salaries. There were these beautiful things happening in the community, and yet it wasn't resonating for at least a portion of the staff, and they were still feeling uncomfortable. And I really wanted to quit.
That must have been so hard.
It was
so hard.
And thank goodness I had the team that I had who kind of stood by me and helped me navigate that. But it was really a wake-up call. And so as it goes, our greatest learning comes from those hardest moments in our lives. And I started searching. I had always been reading leadership books. I started looking like as if my life depended on it, which clearly it did, for the keys to a more cohesive and stronger community, and really started to learn about what it meant to create belonging in a community.
Huh. Well, what did you find? I mean, you must have been looking in new places. What did you find that was helpful to you?
First of all, I discovered Brené Brown's work, which is so beautiful and powerful, and really the work around shame and vulnerability, and her later work now about leadership has been really powerful. And I also have to say that The Culture Code by Dan Coyle absolutely became our blueprint around here. It really gave us a roadmap to look and see and to dig into what else we could be doing. I highly recommend that as well. And I also learned about polyvagal theory and the nervous system and how our nervous systems are wired. And candidly, that work has helped me with the staff and with children. And I've brought in that training to our staff as well.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What is polyvagal theory?
Oh, gosh, I would love to talk about polyvagal theory. And actually, we should have somebody come in for the podcast to talk about polyvagal theory at length. But in short, it is the concept that our nervous systems are generally, they're in one of three states. And so we can be in what's called ventral vagal, which means we're in a state of ease and safety. And mm-hmm. when we're in that state, we don't take things personally. There's a lot more ease. Our nervous system is relaxed. Then there's something called sympathetic. That's where it's fight, flight, freeze, or mm-hmm. fawn, which is interesting. Like we fawn over other people.
Oh, trying, I haven't heard the fawn part
right
before.
Trying to feel safe, right? Like, and so we all have different tactics. I was a fawner. I was a freezer and a fawner until I became aware of it. And then there's also what's called dorsal, and dorsal, you're really depressed or you can't, you're non-functional. I realized I, as a school leader, was living a lot of my life actually in sympathetic. So in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, where I was amped up. You can still be very effective in that state, but it doesn't mm-hmm. create a sense of calm and peace for those around you. And so that was something that was really helpful in my own self-discovery along this process. And I think actually that's something I really wanted to say is that our leadership, the way that we are wired as leaders, is directly reflected in the organizations we run. So if I'm going to be amped up all the time, then of course my community is going to be amped up all the time. There's not that, it is a direct reflection of us and who we are. And really, it can even be our nervous systems and our way of thinking and our energetics. There's quite a bit of work on that as well.
Huh. That's so interesting, because I'd imagine to be an inspiring leader, it can be positive to be adrenalized and excited mm-hmm. and looking forward and always moving forward. And yet what I hear you saying is that that energy can also inspire that in staff, which isn't necessarily the most peaceful state for them to be living and working in.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how you reconcile that.
Well, it's a balance, right? So bringing in inspiration in a way that the staff can actually hear and respond to and be excited about, and they have their voice involved in it, rather than it being me coming in and saying, oh my gosh, I've got this great idea and here's what we're going to do, and there's no connectivity or involvement. And really, I was making a lot of decisions on my own. And that's a whole nother conversation mm-hmm. about bringing people in and what does that look like. And when I started looking at the polyvagal and the culture code and Brené Brown's work, I have to say that I realized that that human beings are wired to think that there's something dangerous coming. And we have to be like, you know, our brains are set up for a saber-toothed tiger to be popping out from behind the rock, and we need to keep ourselves safe. Mm-hmm. And so what ends up happening is that there's this sense that a saber-toothed tiger is chasing even when it's not. So we have to be completely overzealous about sending belonging signals. And that was something that I was absolutely failing at as a leader. And it has taken quite a while to try to understand what does that look like for a school. Now, what's interesting is everything that I was learning in as a leader and about how to make my community feel safe and connected were concepts that we use in Montessori classrooms every single day.
Oh, that's amazing. You're right, because that's the culture we want to create for our students of mm-hmm. peace and calm and receptivity and investment. That makes so much sense that you'd want to create that same feeling among a staff or a whole school community.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that look like? How do you do that? How do you create a work environment that works like a Montessori classroom?
Well, so there's so many pieces, right? It's like asking, how do you have a Montessori classroom run so beautifully, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many components. Right. But just breaking it down, I change the way that I think about my team and my staff. And so I realized that I, as a leader, was thinking, why can't they just get this? Or what's going on with them that they're not here? And just like in a Montessori classroom, I had to learn how to meet people where they were, mm-hmm. right? And just the way that we say children do well if they can. Thank you to Ross Green, by the way, right. for that, who does Lives in the Balance. But we know that our staff do well if they can. And what is it that's in the way of them doing the best they can do? Now, not everyone's designed to work in our environment either. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to pretend that everyone's in a fit, but many people are a fit. And we have to really look at ourselves to see, how are we not creating them to be great? How are we responsible for how they are educated, how they're trained, and the prepared environment they are in as staff, just like we do in the classroom setting? It's actually those same questions. And
that makes so much sense, because no one wakes up in the morning saying, oh, I'm going to do a lackluster performance at my job today. You know, I'm just going to phone it in. I mean, most mm-hmm. people are doing their best. And you're right. What we ask in a Montessori classroom, if a child isn't successful, what can I do to meet the need better? So it's just applying that same rule of thumb mm-hmm. in the work setting.
Mm-hmm. And it's looking at, like, when, for example, if you get to the end of September and your classroom's not normalizing, you're taking a look and saying, huh, how did I bring these students in? Is mm-hmm. this the way that I needed to bring them in? And it's the same conversation. There's a lot of research now that shows that how we bring in our staff is one of the key components to their retention, right? And those first few days of training and the first few really weeks that they're in the school will decide a significant percentage of whether or not they stay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now when we're onboarding, we are so conscious of, first of all, that people need to be connected, that the relationships are the primary piece that help them have a sense of belonging. And so we are putting a lot of time into their development of relationships with us and with each other from the very beginning. We have them talk about their strengths. We have them talk about the gifts they bring to the community. We find that makes such a difference in their vulnerability and their willingness to show them their whole selves and how connected they feel, right? We also have them, we try to get them something that's personalized so that they have something that has their name on it that says Greenspring Montessori School. And so that gives them that sense of connectivity as well. We spend a full day now on teaching them about Montessori and what does it mean to be in a Montessori setting? And we spend a whole day on what does it mean to be in our community. Now, and we have a half day on diversity, equity, inclusion work. We have a half day on how to discipline in a way with the children that works in our community. So they are so much better prepared because we've invested that time. Now, I will tell you, we just had somebody come in mid-year. We put all this time in. And then 2 days later, she didn't make it with us. She just said she was overwhelmed. You're right. It's a big job. And there is a cost there. But what's ending up happening is our people are so much happier on their way in, and there's mm-hmm. this groundedness in the community that comes out of that. And that's just one example, you know, when we really had to take a hard look at our onboarding.
We'll have to come back to that topic. That would be interesting to dive deeper into all the different ways to do more effective and community building onboarding.
I love that. Yeah, that's a topic unto itself, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing I think, you know, just kind of, and there's so many pieces here, and I will tell you, on June 23rd at our Green Spring Center for Lifelong Learning conference, I'm doing a whole day on how to create a culture of belonging. And, you know, it's 6 hours worth of content, and truly I'm so excited to be able to dig in at that level with folks. Mm-hmm. But for right now, some of these other pieces to think about is how much vulnerability we're offering as leaders.
Mm-hmm. So how do you show vulnerability as a leader mm-hmm. without compromising, you know, your authority at the same time? What does that look like?
That's such a great question. I really had it that if I was really showed that I didn't know how to do something, or I had messed something up, I would try to kind of hide my mistakes. Not always, but sometimes, you know, I didn't quite say, oh, well, I didn't do that. I wasn't really willing to step into that because I thought that people would think that I wasn't a good leader mm-hmm. because I was missing these pieces, right? And I had that lens. And when I started really digging into this work, I realized that actually to create strength in a community, one of my first jobs as a leader is to step into my own vulnerability. And I had to give up looking strong in some ways to say, I really messed that up, right? Or, gosh, I did not do that well. And even the ability to step in and when, you know, we're on a new project or something and say, I don't know how we're going to do this. I want the team's input on this. And it was such a relief to the community as a whole, because then that gives everyone permission to do that. Right.
So you started modeling that it's okay to make mistakes, okay to admit mistakes. And then what I'm hearing is also sharing that you don't always know all the answers, you know, mm-hmm. asking for help in making important decisions sometimes.
That's exactly right. And it's just what we do in our classrooms, right? We show the children, we never as the guide or an assistant in a Montessori classroom want to pretend like we didn't do something right when we messed it up. That would be the worst thing. The children would see through that in a split second, right? And so mm-hmm. we're modeling a friendliness with error for the children in the classroom. Oh, I messed that up. I didn't do that well. And they learn how to do that. It also, I need some help on this. I'm not sure how to do this by myself. We can also teach them how to do that, right? And they get to see that. We need to do that as school leaders. And what ends up happening is it creates a sense in the culture that it's okay to take risks. It's okay to mess up. It's okay to take on a project that you may not know how to do all the parts yourself. And wow, what a beautiful opportunity for the community to come together and work together to create something.
Yes. But I'm thinking now, so what if you do have a concern that you need to share with someone? You do need to go ahead and have a hard conversation with someone on your staff. Mm. How do you do that in a way that still helps them feel safe?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it comes out of the relationship, right? So, mm-hmm. and there's so many pieces here. One of the things that I had to learn was that clarity is kindness. We mm-hmm. say that all the time in our community. Clarity is kindness. And I always want to start by assuming that somebody doesn't actually know what the expectation is so that they have the opportunity to learn what the standard is. And we acknowledge from the beginning we have high standards. We mm-hmm. expect our community to operate in this way. And there's a kindness in being really specific about that. So we always want to do that. I also had to learn how to individuate. And that was mm-hmm. something that I was not doing at all. So if I had three people, we have 60 staff. So if I had three people who were consistently late, we would reach out to them in our staff bulletin and say, we'd say to everybody, please make sure you're on time. Right. Instead of saying, pulling those people aside and saying, hey, I noticed that you've been late the last 3 days. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what's going on for you. How can we support you in being here on time? And here's why it's important. Right. And so that's a whole different. So then the whole staff was having to hold this conversation about being, nudged for being on time when only three of the staff actually were having the issue. And that does not allow for the community to feel safe because all of a sudden they're all being held accountable for what a few people are doing. Hmm. Right.
And it sounds like the intention, was to be kinder or, less direct to those staff members having the lateness problem, but it was actually taking a toll on the entire staff instead of speaking with them directly and just delivering that message clearly to those individuals.
That's right. And delivering it in a way that is kind and without judgment, right? Because we as leaders so often can get it. If we're in judgment or resentment, that's on us. As leaders, mm-hmm. we can own our own emotions. I had somebody walk into my office the other day and I said, I'm very upset, right? Mm-hmm. And that wasn't about blame or that somebody was in trouble. It was just really having to own where I was emotionally rather than pretending I wasn't and murking through this conversation together without any real ownership of where I was emotionally. Right.
Right. And what I hear you saying, too, is that at the same time you can be upset, you can also assume best intentions and be curious. I love the way you phrased that. I've noticed that and you name the issue. Can you help me understand mm-hmm. what's going on and mm-hmm. really ask because you might not have the full picture.
So often we don't have the full picture. So often we have, I call it building a case and we have. This person's done X and Y, and so we put together that there's this whole story behind it. That's part of Brené Brown's work that I love, is she talks mm-hmm. about saying, the story I'm making up is X, Y, Z, right? Rather than making the assumption. And it's just what we do in our Montessori classrooms, right?
I noticed
that you have been sitting in the snack table for 25 minutes today and none of your other friends can come and make it to the snack table. Can you tell me what's going on? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I had yogurt and it's taken or whatever it is.
Right.
So just like in the classroom, clarity is kindness in our classrooms as well. And we provide clarity and that direct conversations. I cannot say enough about how important it is to have conversations directly. And I will tell you that one of the things we've worked on so hard in our community is we've worked diligently on getting rid of triangulation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Triangulation is when somebody says, so I have somebody come to me and say, well, my assistant is not, let's just stick with getting here on time in the morning. And okay. She walks in 15 minutes late every day. And it used to be that we had, as administrators, we'd have people tell us those things. And then we would step in to have that conversation with the other person. Mm-hmm. What ends up happening?
Yeah, what do you do instead?
Well, first, let me just say that what ends up happening is that then the person, the assistant no longer trusts the guide. right? Because instead of having a direct conversation with the assistant right. about the concern, they've come to us as leaders and we've stepped in and we've taken away, just like in the classroom, we've taken away the opportunity for the guide to build the skill of direct communication, which is like any other muscle, and we have to use it or it does not get developed. And that's part of why these conversations can be so hard for guides, because first of all, how would they have any practice with this, right? Most teachers become teachers because they love children. They're not necessarily aware of all the leadership components that goes with this, right?
Right. We're often not even all that comfortable among other right. adults. We're so happy in our classrooms and know what to do with the children, but that's a completely different skill set.
That's right. That's right. So just like in the Montessori classroom where we say, okay, Susie and Rosa, you all are having trouble. Let me bring you together to have a conversation. That's what we do now. And it takes so that there's really a sense of trust within the community that if something's not working, we're really facilitating people to have those skills. We're training them. We're working with them. We're holding them accountable when they go off and really complain to someone else rather than having their direct conversation. And that really helps facilitate safety in a community in a really unique way, because folks can count on people talking to them directly. Now, we're not perfect at it by any means, but it is definitely a piece. And it took quite a while, but now when people share something with us, we say, you know, it's the first thing. Well, have you talked to them about it? No, I haven't. I know I need to. And then we say, okay, what's by when, right? And mm-hmm. and do you need any help with that conversation? And so if they need support, we will sit in the conversation with them. But we make sure that it happens, and it has to happen soon. Because what happens with resentment in organizations is an issue gets sat on and it mm-hmm. hasn't been addressed. And I can't even tell you how many schools I step into, and there can be even a palpable sense of resentment when things are not addressed directly. And if there's nothing else that you take away as a leader from this conversation today, it's to step in directly with curiosity. Like you said, Margaret, that key component, bringing that curiosity in as a school leader, but also clarity about what the expectations are, that really makes a tremendous difference.
Well, and what I hear you saying is that it shifts the role of the administrator then to encourage the person to go ahead and handle that conversation directly and ask for support if they need it. But that's very different than stepping in and fixing it for them.
That's exactly right. Just like you would with a child.
Mm-hmm.
Because then
that makes so much sense.
Then they're building the skill. Right. And it's just like any skill, we have to use it to build it. And it's not going to be perfect at first. And that's okay. I think a piece of it is really helping people understand that it's not comfortable. But what's interesting to me is how often we're willing to have the children go to, say, the peace table or conflict resolution, and they're not comfortable with it, but we can support them in that. But when it comes mm-hmm. to adults, we want to step back, right?
Right. And we don't want to go there. It's not comfortable.
Right. That's right. That's right. And I think and just the other piece is then you've had, you know, the guide has talked to the assistant and there, you know, there could still be an issue. We do address things then directly and clearly. So if there's a concern with somebody in the community that's not operating in a way that works in the community, we're going to step straight into that conversation as well, so they can trust that if they're struggling in their role or if there's something that we've identified as an administrative team that's not working, one of us is having that conversation directly. And our goal is always to really give belonging cues, even as we are giving this feedback. And those belonging cues, they come straight out of Dan Coyle's work, Culture Code. It really, what we're trying to say to this person is, you're a part of this group. You're an important part of this group. The group is special. Mm-hmm. We have really high standards here. And I believe you can reach those standards, right? And so we are rooting for them and we're giving them clarity on what the standards are. So one of the quotes that he uses, which I really appreciate, is he says, you know, the feedback, great feedback, can sound like, I'm giving you these comments because I have very high expectations and I know you can reach them. And he found that was really magical. And I have to say that that's a lot of what we use now as we're giving feedback, is really providing that. Now, we also don't sandwich, right? If I hear one more time about you're supposed to sandwich feedback, the research actually shows that it's not a good model, because people, they can't trust the positive things you're saying to them at that time.
And it, right? Yeah, I thought you were supposed to use the compliment sandwich. Like, it would cushion the blow of the hard feedback somehow.
Well, they're not going to remember the good things. And while we want them to know that we care about them and see their value, it's not the time to go into acknowledgments or praise. It feels disingenuous and then leads them to a place of not trusting the good things you're actually saying. So those really should be separate. Okay. But I will tell you that one of the things that was a real kind of eye-opening epiphany for me as a leader was that once you do have those hard conversations, it's important to circle back in a relatively short amount of time and have a conversation with that person that has kind of been, you know, called out or brought to the mat, if you will, or however you want to frame that, and just have a conversation with them about something else and let them. One of the mistakes I would make is I would avoid people I just had a hard conversation with, because I knew that they were going to be uncomfortable and I was uncomfortable and I was trying to avoid that discomfort. And what a mistake, because then they thought that I didn't like them.
Right. Which just makes it even more awkward.
Oh, so instead, now I really try to make sure that I see somebody in the next couple of days, or even if one of my team members has to have a hard conversation with somebody, I try to see them in the next few days and connect with them and really have a conversation about their child or something, you know, their love of soccer or whatever it is, so that there's that belonging cue of, you still belong, right? You made a mistake, or this piece isn't working. There's something you're working on, but you still belong. It's okay. We're in this together and we're all working on our things, and that's okay. Right. So
it sounds like it's so important to have that foundation of belonging, so that when you step into a difficult conversation, that's already there. And then you can loop back around and let the person know it's still here, even after that hard conversation. I'm curious, though, as a leader, what some of the tricks are, maybe tricks isn't the right word. How do you help staff feel that they belong?
I think it's so multifaceted, and I think we should do a session just on that belonging and all of those tactics. But I will tell you that this communication we're talking about is a key component of it, and I think a big piece is how you respond when people voice a concern. Okay. So when people come in to me to share that something's not working or they don't like something, my job is to embrace them and to love them and to say, even if I completely disagree, right? Mm-hmm. I had a staff member come in one time and she was really upset. She had a colleague who was not returning, and she was upset about that. And she said, you know, I don't think you care about your people. And you know, that was so hard to hear. Yeah. You know, here I've, as school leaders do, you know, pour you pour your heart and you're just there, you know, every moment of your day into creating a community, and then to hear that somebody feels like you don't care about people, right? And my job in that moment was, and I still remember what I said. I said, respectfully, I disagree. And I so appreciate how much courage it must take for you to share that with me. I really want to thank you for not going out and saying that in the parking lot and telling me that directly. Can you help me understand what makes you say that? And so I don't necessarily disagree in those moments, but I felt like it was important for her to know that I feel like I really care about my staff and each member of my team. And it was interesting because so she wrote me, I don't know, maybe a week later and actually apologized. And, you know, at the end of the year, we were sitting there together at our happy hour. And she said that, you know, that was amazing that you held that. My respect for you as a leader really grew when you were willing to have me say this thing to you, which she said clearly wasn't true, but she was hurt and she was angry. And so really creating just like you would with a child, and not that that we're trying to, what we're doing in Montessori is we really acknowledge that the child is the leader of man and humankind, right? So when we say that we're treating our staff the way we treat children, that's incredible, incredible gift that we're giving them, because we're saying we're going to hold you with this great respect and revere you. And
well, and that's what I heard, is that you didn't have to disagree with the person to still validate the emotion that she was having, which we always want to do with our children too, right? We don't have to agree, but their emotions, whatever they are valid. So we have to hear them and hold space for that. So that's a direct parallel to the way we show respect for children. And it's so interesting that she was able then to have a completely different perspective after feeling really heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had thought we were going to lose her. Right. Mm-hmm. And she's good at her job, right? We didn't want to lose her from that role. And it's easy. I will tell you, like in my previous life as a school leader, if somebody came in and did that, then I might've said, well, it sounds like maybe Greenspring isn't a good fit for you. Mm-hmm. Right? If you feel
and
like
that would have been a loss to the school.
That's right. And loss of somebody who's seasoned and experienced and really brings a lot to the community. So how we carry ourselves as leaders and that work that we do, and that's the last piece. And then I know we have to wrap up because, you know, this is such a mammoth conversation and ginormous topic. I'd love to come back and do talk about belonging cues specifically. But the piece we have to remember is that our job is, as Dr. Montessori told the teacher, which is to self-reflect first, and how important it is for us to really acknowledge our own emotions and come in with that every day, a fresh day, and be aware and conscious of our own emotions and acknowledge them. I've started to say, I'm triggered right now, which I wouldn't have admitted before. I thought it showed too much weakness. But the truth is, when we're triggered, everyone already knows that we're triggered, right?
Right.
Let's just own it and really develop that ability in the community for people to really own where they are emotionally. So now we have people who will say, I'm really disappointed to hear that, or that really, I feel sad about that. And that openness around our emotions. And then we're the other piece. I know I keep saying I'm going to close and I keep going, but there's so much, but the other piece is then really giving people the opportunity to have their feelings and not feeling like we have to rush in and fix it, but just being with them, right? Providing that empathy, providing that connection, just like we do in a Montessori classroom, right? And the great Montessori guide doesn't go in and say, don't cry to the child. Right. That's the worst thing, right? Or get up, you're okay. You never say that to a child. You're going to say, I see you fell down and you're really upset, and you're going to sit next to them and be connected. And so giving our staff that same opportunity that they can have feelings, that's okay. We mm-hmm. We're still connected. We still love each other. There's still belonging present, and really supporting them in that moment, not trying to avoid those tough emotions, but really being a safe place for them. That does not mean that we would ever be disrespectful to a child or feel like that would be okay. We say, if you're feeling upset, you have to step away, right? You have to own it. And we're not going to pretend that things are a way that they're not. So does that make sense?
And then as a leader, you become the champion of your staff. It's just a different way of viewing the role. Instead of giving direct instruction like we don't in a Montessori classroom, you become a guide, you become a champion, you offer encouragement. It's a perfect analogy. It makes so much sense to apply those same principles to school leadership.
That's exactly right. And what it does is it allows the school leader to become a different kind of leader, right? The visionary, right? Which always mm-hmm. our goal is to be the visionary who's motivating people to work hard towards a common shared vision. Mm-hmm. Also, then you get to be affiliative, which you're creating harmony and building relationships. And really you get that the people come first. There's consensus seeking, and we haven't even gotten into like, how do you give voice to your staff? That's a whole nother part of our workshop and part of what I'd love to talk about. So creating consensus through collaboration, like, what do you think? And then, of course, coaching and developing people through their strengths, which is, you know, this is what I see. Have you thought about this? And so, and then, of course, we still have to be pace setting, right? Mm-hmm. Our job as leaders is to provide clarity on expectations. And like in our school community, we're very clear that we are a fully implemented Montessori community. That's non-negotiable. And everyone knows that. Everyone's on board with that. It took us a while to get there, but that gives everyone that structure that we're operating in together. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And clearly we have so much more to talk about. We'll break this up into pieces and and continue the conversation. But I really want to thank you for spending this time with us today and sharing parts of your story and your insights and what you've learned. Thank you. What a gift.
Well, I tell you, if I can save people from having to go out and make these same mistakes, that would be wonderful, because it's a loss to the community. It's a loss to people who could be in the Montessori movement. And the mm-hmm. truth is that we as a movement, we're precious few, and we're up to such big things. We need to take absolutely the best care of our community that we possibly can, and really support this Montessori movement through Montessori leadership, true Montessori leadership. So I really appreciate you talking with me about this today. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. And I look forward to sharing this at our conference and in some future podcasts as well. Thanks so much, Margaret.
Oh, thank you. Well, and to our listeners, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast to hear the latest episodes and join in our conversation on Facebook and Instagram. Take a look at our website, greenspringcenter.org, to view the show notes from today's episode. You can hear more from Tamara, who will be giving a brief introduction to creating a culture of belonging in her talk at the AMS conference in March 2023. And she'll be doing a deeper dive in a full-day workshop at the Baltimore Montessori Conference Friday, June 23rd, 2023, in Baltimore, Maryland, on the Greenspring Montessori School campus. So visit our website to learn more about our annual conference. Listeners, thank you for spending time with us today. The work you do is important, and we are here to help. Join us next week.